Welcome, my friends, to another edition of the show. I'm Dave Champion and my co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. You know, Bill, I wanted to let you know that I can tell that this show is well-received in Pahrump. And the way I know that is because people stop me all around town. And, or they'll say, you know, oh, Dave Champion, right? You know, I'll turn around and have a little conversation with them. And it's funny because they always refer to me as Dave. And, you know, I have my show, so I've, at first sometimes I'm not sure which show they're referencing. And I know it's this show because they always say then this is the show you do with Mr. Carnes.
That's respect.
I figure it's because they think
you. Thank you for the respect.
I figure it's because they think you're my grandfather.
You think so? Is that it?
Yeah. Anyway, but thank you very much for the very kind comments as I go around town. It is appreciated. Yeah, that's right. All right. We wanted to talk about something today, and that is why particular actions by government officials, police in this particular instance, are not criminalized. Now, this is something that I've had on my mind for a long time. Bill was talking to me last week or so ago,
yes.
And he pointed out there are certain things that local government bodies in Pahrump do that are adverse to the law, and they should be complying with the law, but there's no penalty built into the law if they don't.
Yes. Let me just give you a little bit of that. It says in our state law that, in this case, local governments will do this, 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 and this when they're conducting business. However, if they don't, there is no criminal penalty attached.
No penalty at all, civil or criminal.
No, none at all. There is no penalty attached if they don't follow the law. And I was talking with Dave about a couple of things that one of our local governments is doing that is they're not following the law, but there's no penalty attached. So what can you have to rely on their
goodwill?
Yeah, the goodwill, their generosity, that they'll follow the law. Oh, we'll do it.
They're politicians, so that we can, of course, have confidence in them.
Sure.
Yeah. But police, obviously, a different story because they're hands-on. Okay. Elected officials can probably ultimately do more damage than cops, but the damage that cops do when they break the law is more immediate and can be more violent.
Yes.
So there's a couple of things that Bill and I would like to kick around that we question why these things have not been criminalized. Let me give you the list, and then we'll talk about them individually. The first one is why it has not been criminalized for a police officer to tell a citizen that they cannot film a police officer in a public space in the commission of his public duties. Now, that presumes that he's not crowding the officer or creating a dangerous situation. I think we're all in agreement that that's impermissible.
Sure.
But that does not exist in 99% of the cases. So in the cases where that 0.1% or the 1% doesn't exist, why is it not criminalized when a police officer looks you in the eye and says, you're not allowed to film me, when that's a blatant falsehood? Now, the second issue, seizing recording equipment on which a citizen has lawfully recorded a police officer in the commission of his lawful duties in a public place. And lastly, when a police officer enters a structure without a warrant, he's not in hot pursuit, and there is no exigent circumstances. So, Bill, why don't you lead off with the first one, which is filming?
This has been something that's come up over the last several years, and of course, social media has really brought it in. You've got Cop Block, which is dedicated to getting videos.
Police the police.
There's all kinds of apps you can download onto your smartphone to do audio and video recording, audio and or video recording, that immediately streams and uploads as things are going on. So if they do the second thing, which is seizing or destroying the device, it's been uploaded. It's there. It's part of the it's part of history now. A backup exists. The thing is years ago, the Supreme Court came out and told police in one of their cases, and I forget which exact case it was, but they said you're allowed to lie to suspects in order to try to garnish information when doing an interrogation, an investigation, right? So the unfortunate thing that's happened is a lot of police, and this is through, it starts with their training, they're taught to lie virtually all the time. I had a discussion once with a guy I know that was a retired cop out of New York near the city, and he said it went down the way I put it in my report. To where I said, you know, it's interesting because to me, my report dictated how it actually went down on the street.
Yeah.
which is the way it's supposed to go.
Right.
And he argued with me. He argued with me something hard. He absolutely disagreed that that was the way to do it.
Famous statement, in my opinion. New York detective, retired. Some of the greatest fiction ever written in America appears in police reports.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And cops perjure themselves constantly on the stand to back up these false reports. The thing is they end up lying about all kinds of things all the time. And if they tell somebody, you can't do that, it's because they want something their way. If cops want something their way, they'll tell you this is the way it is, and they expect you to believe them. When the Supreme Court says you can lie, they took it well beyond the intent of that decision, and now cops lie all of the friggin' time, for the most part.
Many do.
It's an industry problem.
Yeah, it is.
Across the board, you see a lot of cops that are divorced, they're unhappy in their marriage, they don't have good personal lives, and a lot of that has to do with because they've been so ingrained into dishonesty, into speaking dishonest, and not holding up what they do. It's an industry problem, and it becomes very systemic. I mean, there's a big suicide problem within the industry as well. And I have a feeling that all of it relates back to how they're trained and it's ingrained in them to lie so often. So in order to get something that you want, you lie to somebody that you encounter. You can't film me. Well, you can't film me because I don't want you to. It goes back to the thing we've talked about many times, we both really profess, is body cams, constant body
yes.
cams.
And, you know, there were some state laws in various states, this sort of antiquated laws, going back to like the big VHS camera days, that said that ordinary citizens cannot film police. Okay? And every court that has reviewed those in the last handful of years has struck those laws down.
Maryland has a problem with that because filming a cop while doing his duties, they believe, unless the cop says you can do this, they believe that that was wiretapping.
Oh, exactly. It's nonsense.
And a court overruled that. They said, no, that's not wiretapping.
Of course not. And these are all contrivances of politicians being pushed by the police unions and the super hyper, law enforcement crowd. By that, I mean the citizens that, you know, the cops can do no wrong, that kind. And these things are pushed to protect cops. Well, how are we protecting cops, or how are we protecting anybody for that matter, by hiding the truth? And that's what happens when we do number two, when the cops do number two. When they seize something like this that has the footage of what they just did. Now, you and I know, law aside, common sense, both been in the industry, there's only one reason to take it, and that's because the officer believes it contains information that administratively or judicially is going to hang that officer. Okay? So to seize evidence wrongfully, because they're going to destroy it, that's the whole purpose of seizing it. They're not seizing it, like, I just committed a crime and he caught it on film. Let me seize the evidence and turn it over to the department. That's not how it's going down, right?
thing happened in Florida. You may have seen recently, I posted actually some information on this on my personal Facebook page. There was a cop in Florida that had stopped a couple of guys. He wanted to search a car, and the kid says, I do not consent to you searching. They're outside of the vehicle. And this cop had a partner. The partner ended up not being on the video, and the guy that owned the car, his buddy, was very stealthily filming this interaction.
Remember, yes.
And the cop actually, he slapped the guy, he berated him, he cussed him out. He gave him all kinds of stuff, and then he told his partner to go search the car, even after the guy told him, I don't consent to any search. And the cop couldn't provide any probable cause to search. He told him, search the car anyhow. Well,
actually trying to get the guy to hit him, because after the cop slapped him, he said, what are you going to do now? Are you going to hit me back?
Yeah, he was goading him into this.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And all this was caught on cell phone video with audio. So when the cop, when this video got surfaced, the very next day, the department suspended the police officer. The day after that, he put in his papers, he quit, he retired,
yes.
So that he would protect his retirement. And, of course, he could apply to a second chance department now.
Yeah. There was another case in Louisiana. This goes back probably 4 months ago, 3 months ago. cops they've got some guys down on the ground. It's out in front of a nightclub at like 2 in the morning. And there's this guy, and he's standing there. I mean, you can see in the video, he's standing there holding his phone up so it can see over the heads of people. And he's just filming them. And he's probably standing 30 feet away, clearly not a threat to them in any way. And a cop, one of the cops that was down there doing whatever he was doing with a suspect, he looks up, he sees the thing. He didn't know there was a surveillance camera on the building. And he just walks over, boom, hammers the guy to the ground, takes his cell phone. You know, what the hell? Okay. Why aren't these things criminalized?
Yeah,
I mean, certainly a prosecutor could make the case, the officer that I just described, that he committed a battery.
Yeah, okay? Battery, theft.
Right. But the very act of taking the evidence should be criminalized. The statute should read something like, if you are a sworn peace officer and you seize evidence for the purpose of protecting yourself from criminal prosecution or your partner or other officers, it is a felony. It doesn't matter. Even if I come over and I just grab it from you, so I don't actually touch you, I just grab the phone and yank it out of your hands, okay? Felony.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing that they could prosecute now would be larceny from a person or theft, something like that.
Yeah, very petty.
But it should be its own crime, something like that. And we have a little bit of time now to discuss the third thing, which is cops entering into a building, not having one of the three criteria of a warrant, or they're in hot pursuit, or exigent circumstances, meaning somebody's in there, they need help, there's life or serious bodily injury being threatened.
Right, they look through the window and they see the guy standing there with a knife about to bring the knife down.
They just go in.
Yeah. Indiana, you know, they passed that law a couple of years ago. If a police officer is attempting to gain entry, and he doesn't have any of those three, they can cap his ass.
Yep.
Yeah. And a person was prosecuted just several months ago for doing exactly that, found guilty at trial. The case went to appeal, and the appellate court struck down the conviction and said that under that law, it was a correct act under the Castle Doctrine.
He should have never been charged.
But what happens, you know, the prosecutor, you shot a cop.
You shot a cop.
You got to go on trial.
As though cops can do no wrong. And we have all learned that that is not the case. There are some good cops out there.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of them that are not good. And I got to tell you, when I worked on the department, I realized that probably better than half, 55, 60%, if they weren't carrying a badge, they'd be locked up and be doing time. That was my experience in my department.
There's a lot of very edgy individuals. And I think they sometimes end up getting worse for having taken the job than when they first came on the job.
I would agree.
And we'll be back right after these words. And we are back. And it is now time for what is up with people imagining that somehow their uninformed, factless opinions should somehow be given credibility when applied against views that are well-researched and fact-laden and have some sort of logical veracity to them? This is a phenomenon that has existed for a long time, and it's one that admittedly irks the hell out of me. The reason, you know, this show is totally unprepared, and this just came up for me to this morning, another of the thousands of examples of it. When the Dave Champion Show posts to social media, to YouTube, whatever, there's a description of what the show is about that appears sort of as a heading. You've probably all seen it on social media when a video is posted. It gives you some idea what you're going to watch if you click on it. So the topic being addressed in the show appears right underneath the graphic for the video. And I am constantly amazed when people want to engage in some sort of debate about the topic of the show without watching the show. It's like, wait a second, wait. I spent 52 minutes detailing all the factors relevant to the issue. You don't want to know about any of those, but you want to have your factless, non-credible opinion given some veracity. And in this case from this morning, I want to waste my time debating with somebody who doesn't have the facts. But this is that's one flavor of the larger issue. And this Isaac Asimov, the great science fiction writer, who is no longer with us, he said something years ago which bears directly on this. I want to share the quote with you. Although he's talking about it in terms of democracy, I think it's a cultural issue, not a political issue. Here was his quote. Anti-intellectualism, I like that characterization, has been a constant thread winding its way through our political and cultural life, nurtured by the false notion that democracy means my ignorance is just as good as your knowledge. Bill Carnes.
There's always been a-holes with an opinion out there, whether they're a-holes with knowledge or not. And it would seem as though what's interesting about this quote that Isaac put out was that oftentimes elected officials are the dumbest ones giving an opinion. They actually don't have the facts.
Yes, true.
They have thoughts. And that's really where you get these dreamers, these idealists who end up getting elected to office. Well, I believe that it should be like this, and I believe it should be like that. I can't get too deep in because I start rubbing into what grinds my gears.
Yes, I saw that coming.
So, but they get into these idealistic prophecies, and they think that this should work, having done no research on it and not gone into the history. You remember that guy who was in Congress that I said we needed a piss test, that said that yes, he was worried about all of the military on Guam because he's afraid that the island might tip over. I mean, that's a guy right there that obviously has no facts, no idea. He actually didn't even have a clue.
No. Nancy Pelosi says we should use natural gas because that's better than fossil fuels.
Yes, absolutely, because she's just too stupid to get it. How somebody can be so ignorant, really so dumb, and look so stupid being so dumb, and keep getting reelected is beyond me. Do any of the constituents ever listen to her? And I think what we end up with is now we end up with a situation like this where more of the constituents are anti-intellectual.
Yes.
Than anything else. So they're literally, you're getting a phone call.
I know, it's like, stop calling me, it's the middle of the show.
But that's the problem that we end up having is there's so many dumb people out there that and I have to tell you, Dave, when you become more politically awake and you understand what's going on out there and you really see what's going, you can see the forest through the trees. It's really an unhappy place.
It is. And, you know, obviously, I started this with a thread on social media, which does not involve politicians, but your point is very well taken. And you talk about the politicians, the guy with Guam tipping over and Nancy Pelosi and a host of other absolute idiots.
Sheila Jackson Lee.
There you go.
Wow. Stupid.
However, the way our system works today, I don't believe they need to be informed. I know, stunning statement, right? But here's why. Follow me on this. They're not looking to get elected by an intelligent, informed, knowledgeable, credible electorate.
No, they're just trying to get elected.
They are looking to get elected by knuckleheads just like them. Now, let's take, for example, Nancy Pelosi, California, right? Okay. Now, I'm from California. I lived there a majority of my life, so I know of where I speak. Okay. You've known me a long time, Bill. Have you ever seen me shy away from a fight? And I don't mean a physical, any fight.
No.
Okay, ever. Okay. You want to bring it, we'll go. Okay. However, I left California, a place that I at one time loved. If you had asked me when I was a teenager, will you ever leave California, I would have said you were an idiot. Okay. And then I left. So who's the idiot, right? But the reason I eventually left was I could not stay there being perhaps I'll just characterize myself as the 1% or 2% of the population in California that actually gives a rat's ass about freedom. Yeah. Of what 98% of my fellow people there who are voters don't believe in liberty or freedom? That's not a fight. that fight is over.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're done.
So we look at somebody like Nancy Pelosi and her many ignorant statements. You know, you'll have to wait to find out what's in the bill until you pass
it. All she has to do is speak and you'll hear another ignorant statement.
Right. And you people in California, her, Boxer. Who's the other one? Feinstein. Okay. You keep returning these psychopaths to office. Why? Because most of you in California are absolute freaking idiots. Now, I have good friends, as do you, who live in California, and they're not. But they are like I was when I lived there, overwhelmed by the idiots.
Yeah, and let me classify this. Basically, if you're on the coast, that's where the idiots lie, and that's where most of the people are. Move inland, even 30, 40 miles, and through the rest of California.
Gets
heading
a little more
east,
sane.
Far more sane. I mean, yeah. You've got good counties like Kern County and such. But getting back to the topic on hand, where you've got somebody who's uninformed, but they believe that their opinion matters, I have to tell you, a lot of people who are this dumb are the ones that love to stand up and profess, I've got a First Amendment right. So that you have to listen, to which I love to correct them. And I actually put it in the same terms that you and I are both fans of the music of Trace Adkins.
Yes.
Yes, and he's actually a very strong liberty-minded guy. And I actually saw him in an interview, maybe a couple of years ago. He said it perfectly. The First Amendment is a right between you and your government, not between you and I. If you say something to me that I don't like, I reserve the right to punch you in the mouth. Now, we'll deal with the cops on another issue.
Yeah.
But the thing is it's the truth. Is somebody says, I got a First Amendment right, and you have to listen to what I say. Unless I'm a government official and you're speaking to me based on my job or the performance thereof, no, I don't have to listen to you.
Right. I've got to tell you, the seminal example of the First Amendment being grotesquely misapplied. During the race for sheriff, a woman here in Pahrump posted on Facebook that she did not want Rick Marshall to be sheriff because he is corrupt. So I got on and I sent her a private message and I said, this is your statement. I would like to invite you to come on my show and share with my audience.
Yes, cite the corruption.
Any information that you have, because of course I've known Rick for years as you, and he's not corrupt. He's a sterling human being. And please come on the show. I was very polite. I said, please come on the show. I would like you to cite whatever information that you have that indicates that Rick Marshall has been, is, or would be corrupt. Yeah. Sounds pretty reasonable. So you just slandered a man's reputation,
sure.
Right?
Now, if I were to make a statement like that, I would revel in that invitation
and
accept it without hesitation.
And this woman writes back to me and says, I have a First Amendment right to say that.
Obviously, no idea. Slander, liable,
right.
All of those things. If you don't have any backup, I remember reading something along that lines where someone suggested that you had been convicted of some felony or another to try to slander you, that you had some sort of...
Oh, this was also during the sheriff's race.
Yes. And I actually, I ran into that individual and I said, under what guise do you find that? Well, it was based on this, that, and the other. So you have no idea what you're talking about. You've read nothing. Dave has never been convicted of any sort of felony crime or anything such as that. You may have been convicted of a traffic violation at some point in time.
I think a DUI when I was 18.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, good stuff. Back
that's
when
like
you're 18.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm a serious criminal.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's one of these things that people just, you're right, where they're completely ignorant, but they need to have their opinion. And then you go on there and you start citing facts.
Yeah.
And you experienced this recently. You were citing facts on some things, and somebody can express that you must be somebody who's like a government guy that's tried to infiltrate the freedom movement, and that you're spewing all this wrong stuff, and you've got to be a plant.
I was accused of being a federal undercover agent trying to undermine the freedom movement.
Yes. By giving them information because they didn't like the answer, even though you gave it to them factually with a constitutional basis. The thing is, a lot of people that don't like some of the things the federal government does, and they say, oh, that's unconstitutional. So when you can actually say, well, you don't like it, but in fact it is constitutional based on these things. So better to take your efforts and energy and look at maybe some of these other things that more likely are not constitutional. No, not thank you. You've got to be an insider spewing the falsehood of government intrusion.
A little louder. I have to turn it over to my federal handlers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure it's streaming through. So, yeah, when you talk about ignorant people, again, when we get to my segment in just a few minutes here, we're going to talk about what I believe is the ultimate sin of complete ignorance, yet having an opinion. You know, it's interesting. They say opinions are like a-holes. Everybody's got one.
Yeah. Can I tell you a conundrum I have?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. Share it.
Like Thomas Jefferson, I believe the only safe place, the only safe repository for the powers of governance are in the people. And then I look at the people. Okay. And this phenomenon we're talking about now, where people imagine that their uninformed, factless, non-credible opinions should be given great weight and significance. How can these same people, if they're the people that Tom Jefferson and I have been talking about, how can they govern? It's a conundrum.
They do. That's the problem. That's the problem that we're in now. They're just a bunch of fools. Folks, thanks for sticking around. We'll be right back right after these messages when we find out what grinds my gears. Welcome back from the break. Now let's find out what grinds my gears. You know what really grinds my gears? People who are anti-gun and talk about it. I have never in my lifetime experienced any topic out there that has more passionate people either pro-gun or anti-gun. There's really no middle of the road, it seems, where the people who are anti this topic are so amazingly ignorant, meaning they don't have any of the real information. Yet they'll stand on their soapbox and cry at their loudest decibel about how horrible guns are, how they should be eradicated from our society. There's no use for them. They're evil devices. People that have them are insane. They're waiting to commit a crime. They're murderers in wait just by owning a gun or even supporting any sort of gun. They're insane. They should be locked up. They should be lobotomized, no children, all this good stuff. These are the most ignorant people in our society today as I see it. And that's what really grinds my gears. I used to do a radio show called 2A Radio, standing for Second Amendment Radio. 2aradio.com if you want to go listen to some of the old shows. I did this for, I don't know, 3.5 years or so. And one thing that I found to be basically truth all the way across the board was this. People who are anti-gun as individuals have never been the direct victim of a violent crime. Never. They're anti-gun. That's the way I see this. You don't see somebody who was anti-gun and then they get mugged and get the living hell beat out of them and say, you know what? I'm anti-gun. There was a case recently where you had, I just saw it, as a matter of fact, earlier today or yesterday, I think it was, where you had a veteran who went to the aid of a pregnant woman in Florida where two homeless men were mugging her, beating her up. Who knows what would have happened? He went there to get them to stop her. They turned their attack on him. He shot the both of them. Now you tell me, was he right or was he wrong? Just given that information, I saw the news report. I'll tell you what, he was absolutely right. They say that God created man, Sam Colt made them equal. Because if you have a diminutive, small person, man or woman, that's going up against an individual or several individuals that are a lot larger, not having a gun doesn't have an even playing field. If they want to do whatever they want with you, they're going to. Where Thomas Jefferson once said, liberty or freedom is two wolves and a sheep deciding what to have for dinner, liberty means a well-armed sheep to contest the results. That's really what a democracy would be. 50% plus one deciding what everybody else has to do. Contrary to popular belief, folks, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic, specifically a constitutional republic. Read Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution. It guarantees to everybody a republican form of government. That's not Republican by the party. The party came later. Look up Abe Lincoln. It's a long story. When we have ignorant people, like we were talking about in the last segment, that are just plain dumb. They just don't get it. They're armed with information that they hear from other sources that have not been verified. There's no credibility behind them. They just want to believe what they're hearing. That's when you find people who are anti-gun. Those who have been victims or those who realize what's actually going on, we've got some intellect. A couple of marbles are rolling around. We realize that guns in the hands of informed and intelligent people that know the difference between right and wrong, that is liberty. And that is a way to actually protect yourself from attackers. One thing that bothers the living hell out of me, up until just the most recent few years, the National Rifle Association always professed saying the words firearm or gun and never saying weapon. They didn't want you as an instructor or anybody with the NRA to use the word weapon because they believed that had a negative psyche about it. Well, the Second Amendment, as the NRA used to like to defend it, was for sporting purposes and for hunting. The Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting and sporting purposes. The Gun Control Act of 1968 told the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Bureaucrats Against True Freedoms, etc., as I like to say them, the ATF, that they could regulate various things if they needed to have a sporting purpose behind it. Ridiculous! The Second Amendment doesn't protect us for sporting purposes. It's for individuals and for militias to be able to carry guns, and that right shall not be infringed. Recently, the NRA started to actually get on board with what the Second Amendment is really all about and not quite using strictly hunting and sporting purposes. Dave, you've heard a few anti-gunners spewing their rhetoric now and again. Have you ever found any of them to be credible or any of them that were victims of violent crime?
No, no. On both counts, no. The credibility issue is, you talked about Sam Colt makes him equal.
Yes.
And you mentioned the story of the gentleman in Florida who capped both those guys in the chest.
Yes.
The police chief, in talking about that case and why they felt the shooting was completely acceptable and no charges were going to be brought against the shooter, he was a military veteran who has some sort of a physical disability. And although the sheriff didn't disclose the disability, he said that the disability rendered it impossible or unlikely that he could prevail in a physical altercation with these two, therefore he was justified in shooting. Okay, so that proves the point about Sam Colt.
He's disabled. In fear of imminent death or serious bodily injury.
Yeah, but my point is he was less than whole, and yet he was able to take the day. He was able to, and having the moral high ground, defending a pregnant woman from being beaten, okay, he was able, even with his diminished capacity physically, to win the day because he had this thing.
I would agree.
Which is what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, it's not about sporting purposes. God, there was something else. NRA. Is it not amazing that the NRA has been around since, what, the 30s?
1871.
Really, that far. And they just started recently getting on board with a true intention. Now, sporting purposes. I'm waiting for somebody like Alan Gura, the attorney who's won so many pro-gun cases recently.
For Second Amendment Foundation.
Yes.
Cato.
He comes out of Cato originally.
Yeah, rather than the NRA. The NRA is not winning all these cases.
Right. And I'm waiting for Alan Gura to make the argument that Heller and McDonald void the sporting provision of the 1968 Gun Control Act.
Oh, undoubtedly. We're talking about the D.C. versus Heller and McDonald v.
Chicago
court cases that came out in 2008 and 2010 that really affirmed the individual right to the Second Amendment and how that, within that writing, it pretty much did away with good portions of the NFA of 1932, gun control, GCF 68, as well as some of the other portions of the act that came out in May of 1986. And by the way, I want to clarify, there are a few people that were victims of violent crime that are anti-gun, but we're talking about people that actually have a voice, not individuals. And two of them, for instance, James Brady and Gabby Giffords. Yeah. Victims of violent crime, politically related violent crime, that now that they have a soapbox that they can stand up on and say, we should get rid of guns, look at us, we got shot in the head. And, you know, of course, victims of horrible crimes, people with guns are the ones that need to stop these guys.
Right. And how was who was the one who capped Brady?
John Hinckley Jr.
Thank you. How was Hinckley stopped? By a bunch of guys with guns. They ended up taking him down without shooting him.
Right.
But there was a bunch of guys with guns. Yeah. You know, had he continued on and had he not been, had they not been able to control him physically, what would they have done? They would have shot him.
Yeah, they would have. I mean, the guy had a 6-shot .22, so he wasn't going to get too far. As a matter of fact, the round that went into Reagan, in fact, ricocheted off of the, I guess it would have been the D pillar, the rear window pillar, inside the hinge where the door goes in, just on the backside of the pillar there. That actually ricocheted, went in and his rib cage on his left side from the back. And when the doctors were, they finally, after nearly an hour and a half, found the actual slug in him. It was pretty small. They asked the FBI.
Probably a fragment, I'm guessing.
They thought it was a fragment because they were asking FBI and Secret Service, what was the caliber of the gun? And they kept getting told a .38. They didn't have enough fragments for .38. They didn't find it until later it was a .22. In fact, it was the actual bullet. And Reagan almost bled to death with that because they were looking for more stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so they're digging around for more stuff.
The mass of the bullet would have indicated where's the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But anyhow, back to this, is you have a lot of people, there's been, I actually watched a television program where they took a woman who was from the Northeast, up in the Boston area, who was anti-gun, used to go on marches, anti-gun, this, that, and the other. Boston, of all places. Home of Paul Revere writing and the Tea Party and all of the things, liberty and independent, where this country started. I mean, Boston should be a bastion of liberty
and freedom.
They've gone
a long way in the wrong direction.
They've gone 180. Yeah. These scumbags, for the most part, the way that it is as a society when it comes to guns and such.
Politics show.
But she actually ended up going to a ranch in, I don't know, it's like Tennessee or Texas, something along that line, with a man and his son that were pro-gun. And she went down there and they introduced her to the actual gun culture, taught her how to shoot. They took her to a gun store and got her outfitted with the right stuff. And she ended up saying, yeah, you know what? Guns themselves are not evil.
Right.
Evil people can have guns, but for the most part, these are great folks. I met a lot of good people. She actually was carrying it. They had her working at a gun store, carrying a gun in the gun store after she was trained up, knew the laws, and learned how to actually help out. And it turned around because she had the experience, the hands-on experience. And I got to tell you, I look at it. As ignorant as this, this is a situation I like to give to folks a lot. It's as if somebody said, you know, I hate BMWs. I can't stand them. They're the worst cars. They suck. I'll never drive one. They're horrible. Have you ever driven one? Well, no, but I would because they're so horrible. All right. Here's the keys to a brand new 750i. Here's a gas card. Here's a 3-day weekend. Go drive the car, bring it back, then we can have the discussion. If after that weekend, then you hate BMWs, at least now you have a credible,
informed
opinion. Yep. You're not ignorant. When I have people tell me that they talk about all this anti-gun stuff, and I ask them, have you ever shot or learned how to properly shoot? Have you been professionally trained anything with a gun? Well, no. Okay, then your position is completely ignorant. You have no basis for your opinion whatsoever, which means I'm no longer going to listen to you. I'm not going to listen to you about how horrible BMWs are when you've never even been in one. And I'm not going to listen to you about how horrible I do believe guns are when you have no actual experience with one. You've only got your opinion based on external information and none you've coveted yourself. Shut up. Sit down and let the professionals who know what they're talking about handle this situation. You're ignorant. Go talk about something you have real life experience with.
Yeah.
What he said.
Quite the rant. And we will be back right after these words.
All right, guys, welcome back. Now it's time to go into our viewer mailbag. And, of course, you can always send us your questions, and we encourage you to do that right here. Totally unprepared.
This one
send it to DaveAndBillShow@gmail.com. And, of course, you can also always go on there, and you can watch our episodes. You can download them. You can stream them. You can do just the audio. If you go to our website, which is totallyunprepared.info, totallyunprepared.info. By the way, you see how the T is capitalized and the U is capitalized and the rest are lowercase? We're going to get into something that grinds my gears, and we're going to use this as an example, as a good way to do it, on another episode.
All right.
Dave, coming from the viewer mailbag, what we end up having is a question about how do we think the government would be down the road in about 4 years. How the country would be down the road in about 4 years if the following things happened. If they ended government subsidies and legalized drugs.
Okay.
And these are two, these are not necessarily related things.
Right.
They're just things that the government throws in their hat and controls.
I think what the viewer was trying to express by giving those two examples was the subsidies. Like, if you get the government out of the free market system, I think that was one part of his equation.
I would think so.
And by getting rid of the anti-drug laws, then it's sort of like ending this ridiculous thing called the war on drugs and really reducing the police state. I think that's the two things. Reducing the police state and get the government out of the free market, I think, is what those examples were meant to indicate.
I believe that was a jest, too. If it wasn't, doesn't matter, because that's the direction
that's
we're going to take.
That's where we're going anyway.
Because that's the way we're interpreting the email.
All right.
So
it's not what you say. It's how it's interpreted.
There
right?
you go.
Okay. Where would the country be, he used the example of 4 years from now. I think it would be in a pretty spectacular place. You know, subsidies, it sounds really great because it sounds like you're getting something for free, which, of course, we know is not true. And subsidies, such as farm subsidies, always come with restrictions and limitations. We'll give you this subsidy provided that you don't do this, or we'll give you this subsidy, but now you're bound to these regulations. And it turns into an ugly morass. There's a reason that lobbyists get paid millions of dollars a year. It's to keep this whole ugly thing going. On the other side, the police state part, this I even hate the phrase, war on drugs. We have 4% of the world's population here in the United States. And yet, in a free country, we have 25% of the world's prison population. Talk about out of alignment, man. As a free nation with 4% of the world's population, we should have like 1% of the world's population, if that, in prison, right? We're so far out of whack. So now, I want to be clear. I think there would be what I like to call a shakeout period. When you have something that's contrived, like this war on drugs, okay, and you take this contrivance that causes all this violence and people to be locked in cages, and you take that away, there's always going to be a period of adjustment back to the natural way it would be without the contrivance. Do I imagine that would happen without any ugliness and unpleasantness? No, I'm sure there would be some shakeout.
As there was a little bit when prohibition was repealed.
Right.
There's a little bit of shakeout period for a couple of years.
In the end, and I'll let you detail the reasons why, in the end, I think if we look at 4 or 5 years from now, people would say, why did we live that way for so long? Why did we do that to ourselves?
And it's easy to imagine. Imagine if 4 or 5 years ago, let's say halfway through Obama's first presidency, his first term as president, if the drug laws had gone away, where would we be today? We'd probably be doing okay.
I think so. Absolutely.
You know, I think you'd have a larger percentage of the adult population that had experimented with things at some point in time. Mm. But I also believe that you'd probably have less people really trying to get it done. And the reason I take this position is I look back through history. I have said for many years that the best crystal ball for our future is a history book that's accurate, that you can go back and see the way that human history has gone. That's why a lot of people say, you know, they say the Constitution is outdated because it was written by a bunch of old white men, 234 years ago, and the Constitution's outdated, when it's not, because those old white men took 5,000 years of recorded human history and wrote the Constitution based on human history, yep, the way that human nature truly
is. There you go. Human nature never
changes. So if we go back, we look at Prohibition. Prohibition, we had more trouble, more fatalities, more medical problems, far more people incarcerated during the era of Prohibition. You know,
And the rise of organized crime.
Oh, absolutely. Who then, once they ended up getting out of alcohol and prohibition was taken away, what'd they get into?
No. Drugs.
And gambling.
Yep.
Drugs, gambling, prostitution.
Yep.
You know, if it's illegal, organized crime, and criminals will make money doing it. If it's legal, we take away all of that. You know, there was a jail in Indiana that was sold when Prohibition went through because they said that it's going to end all sorts of crime. And a farmer bought it, he raised chickens and pigs in this old jail cell, this jail complex. Well, they were pretty sorry that they got rid of that because they had a lot of people that they were going to lock up for violating Prohibition.
Right.
When it comes to things such as subsidies, I don't think that subsidies have any place. Free market should handle all of this. The government's got so involved, things like subsidies have choked free enterprise, things along the lines of far too much regulation that we have in this country, too high of taxes when it comes to the corporate tax rate, the highest in the world, that are running companies outside of the United States that were based. So I think Burger King moved to, I think they're in
Canada.
I think they moved from Canada to Ireland now.
No, they just moved to Canada like 4 months ago.
Okay, well, somebody else moved to Ireland, though, but it was one of these bigger organizations because they can't remain competitive in this country doing the things the way they always have been. It's not that they've changed, it's the government has made it much more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And when they get involved in subsidies, this really dilutes and changes the free market economy. It's no longer a free market economy.
It's, again, that I talked about earlier, the contrivance.
Absolutely.
It's creating a contrived, non-natural state of affairs. And if all the subsidies were withdrawn, would there be that shakeout period? There would. Would a lot of people scream like stuck pigs? They would. But what we'd be back to is how the market is supposed to operate, absent government tampering, which is really what it is. And those lobbyists that I mentioned earlier, they get paid so much money because what they're trying to do is get Congress to enact laws and agencies to enact regulations that favor their guy. Now, if they weren't manipulating the market, why would they be getting paid millions of dollars to do it?
I read a study just this last weekend that showed, it was talking about, it was a study of several hundred companies that give between tens of thousands to millions of dollars to various politicians in lobbying efforts throughout the years. And what it came back to was the average dollar spent by one of these companies lobbying or giving to a reelection campaign or something like that has come back to them 716-fold. They spend a dollar, they end up getting $716 back in some sort of, be it a subsidy or a government contract or something like that. And I got to tell you, Dave, if I was told, spend a dollar, I'll give you $716 next week, there's a whole lot of dollars I'm spending to get back 716 to one.
Yeah.
So it pays to have dirty, filthy politicians and ridiculous subsidies like this for the companies that want to put money out there. It's a terrible system.
You know that I am writing Constitution for League of States.
Yes, I do.
With very, very, very few exceptions, corporations are outlawed. And the reason is that corporations, the owners are the shareholders, right? And the owners can never be held accountable for the criminal conduct or the destructive conduct of the corporation. You can't go, when a judgment is rendered against the corporation, it doesn't directly affect the shareholders, right? Minimally, perhaps, if the value of the shares go down, but not directly. And one of the other things I wanted to, that's written in there, is that the only people who can contact, say, a senator or a representative are the people from his constituent area. And no lobbyists. So if you own a company and you want to talk to your elected representative, either you fly to D.C. and you sit down with him there, or you wait till he comes back here when Congress is not sitting and you talk to him here. But if you live in another district, you can't talk to this congressman, okay? Because he doesn't represent you, okay? That would solve, I mean, a lot of people are going to say, Dave, my God, that's so stringent and strict. Why should somebody from Minnesota be talking to the congressman from California? And why should they be paying somebody $1 million a year to go talk to him? Okay? There's only one reason to do that, and it's not for the health of the country.
You have to take money out of politics, especially at the federal level.
Yep.
You have to do it. And the thing is, we won't see it in our lifetime. The only way for this to happen is for the entire country, in my opinion, to completely collapse, fall apart, our system of government basically be broken down and destroyed and built back up. The reason is, there's only two ways to do this. And it would have to come through a constitutional amendment. And we either get the people who are part of the problem that are on the take to write that amendment and put it in, or we have a League of States constitutional convention to put it in, which we have lower version of people who are listening to the higher end people at the federal level that are the ones that are going to be attending this constitutional League of States to do it. And I don't see that happening. So really what that means is the problem is going to last a very long time. To really get back to the original, until the end of this form of government that we have, as far as I can see it, and maybe there's information out there that could lead me to another conclusion. But right now, based on what I know, information and belief, this is where I am.
I do want to add a little comment. When I said no corporations, a lot of people will immediately say, well, wait a second, concentration of capital is essential in the world market. I mean, if other countries are going to allow concentration of capital, then we need to also. And the Constitution for League of States does permit that, but under the form of a legal partnership. You can have 18,000 people invested in the partnership, but none of them are immune from the actions of the corporation. How closely do we think the owners are going to be watching what the CEO and the president and the vice president?
Oh, yeah.
How closely?
They'll be accountable.
If their money's on the table rather than, oh, it's just a judgment that's going to affect the corporation, I'm going to still keep my million-dollar home, I'm still going to keep my cars and my trophy wife.
Right.
None of that's going to affect me. Now, if it does, they're going to be keeping a much more careful eye.
Back to narrowing down the viewer's question, how do we see the country in 4 years if those things happen? I think it'll be doing just fine. I think it'll be on the upswing. It might take a little bit longer to actually get up there than 4 years, but I think within 4 years we're going to see the positive result.
I think, if I can use an analogy, I imagine in 4 or 5 years America would look a hell of a lot more like I believe America should be looking.
Touche.
Yep. My friends, thank you so much for joining Bill and I on Totally Unprepared. It's been a pleasure having you, and I hope you'll join us again next week. Take care. Bye-bye.